grandfather can get that in.
All right, Jabosai, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. We are picking up on Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, three lines down. A beautiful, beautiful daf today. Says the Gemara, so remember again, we're actually going to jump back and forth between a couple of different stories, between certain things happening in the Yarden, but specifically with a focus on the Miraglim. So 35a, three lines down. Vayisapru lo vayomru banu. So remember, the Pasuk says, speaking about the Miraglim, that the Miraglim came, they delivered a report, and they said, we came to the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us to, and it is Zavas Chalav Udvash, it indeed flows with milk and honey, and these are its fruits. So remember again, after they say it flows with milk and honey, they say, but the nations who live there are exceptionally strong, and there's no way we'll be able to overcome them. So the Gemara says, "Uksid efes ki az ha'am." But they said again, as wonderful as the land is, the nations who live there are very strong, and we can't conquer them. But it is amazing. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Mishra Meir, Koloshin Harashe in Boldover, MS Betchilasa in this Kaimis Sofa. Because Sir Meir says, any piece of Lashon Hara that does not have a nugget or a morsel of truth is never accepted. In other words, that people by definition avoid sheker. Something is just a total lie, people aren't going to believe it. But a piece of Lashon Hara that has a little bit of truth allows people to latch onto it and ultimately believe it. He's learning that out from, because that's why the Miraglim begin with the statement, yes, the land is Zavas Chalav Udvash. The land flows with milk and honey. No question. But the nation there that's too strong. Vayas Kalev Sa'am al Moshe. So Kalev silenced the nation onto Moshe. What the Gemara picks up on over here is, what does that mean, that Kalev silenced the nation onto Moshe? So the Gemara says, Pasach Yehoshua the Kamishtai. Amalei din rosh ketia yimala. So Yehoshua tried to silence the people and to get them to realize that the land was good and that they can go in. But the people said, should the one with the cut off head be able to speak with us? Now, what that was a reference to was the following. Yehoshua did not have children. He did not have children. Didn't have sons. And so, interestingly enough, with what the people said is, Yehoshua, you don't have a say in this. Why don't you have a say in this? Because the truth is, you have no skin in the game. Because if we go into here again, you have no children that will or won't inherit. And therefore, again, we're not listening to you. Amar imishtaina amri bei milsa v'chasmili. So we'll say, so Kalev is trying to get the attention of the people. So if I just try to defend Moshe and try to defy the land, try to defend the land, and the people will just silence me the same way they silenced Yehoshua. So Amar lohen, v'chizo bilvad asalano ben Amram. So what does Kalev do? He begins speaking. What does he say? He says, is this the only thing that the son of Amram has done to us? So everybody quieted down. Why, Rabbo say? Because Savre begenuse kamishtoi. So what happens? Because they thought that Kalev was about to rip into Moshe Rabbeinu. Is this the only thing he did to us? So people, everybody quiets down. Ishtiku, because they want to hear what else Kalev has to say. Amar Lahu, and he says to them, no, it's not the only thing he did to us. Hotzi anu mitzrayim, he took us out of Egypt. Ve'karlan asem, he split the sea. Ve'achilanu es haman, and he went ahead and he gave us the man. Im yomar asu sulamos va'alu l'rakia, lo nishma alo. If he tells us to construct ladders and ascend to the heavens, would we not listen to him? Alo na'alev yarashnu osa. Let's go up and let's inherit the land. So Bo said, the idea over here is that Kalev employs a very interesting, you see a lot of psychology here, right? The Miraglim understand that in order to get the people to buy into their slanted and negative narrative, you have to throw out a little nugget, a little morsel of truth. And then people will latch onto your Lashon Hara. Kalev realizes that if he just starts out with the truth, he can't get the attention of the people. So he needs a hook to bring the people in. They're looking to attack Moshe Rabbeinu. It makes sense. He's attacking Moshe Rabbeinu. But then he says, look at everything Moshe has done for us. We can do this. But the people who came, the other Miraglim said, we can't do this. Impossible. We can't go up into the land. Amar Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Davar Gadol Dibru Miraglim, but also Shah. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa said, the Miraglim said something very profound in that moment. Ki chazak hu mimenu. Now, literally, again, it says, because he is strong, because they are stronger than us. Atikri mimenu, ela mimenu. Right? Don't read a mimenu, Rabbi mimenu. What does that mean? They weren't saying that the nations are stronger than us. What they were saying was what? The nations are stronger than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What the Gemara is trying to highlight over here is that the struggle of the Meraglim was not with Moshe. The struggle of the Meraglim was not with the nations of Canaan. Like most struggles that our ancestors had in the desert, and like most struggles that we have, it's really with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What the Meraglim were really saying was, we don't think God is powerful enough to vanquish these nations. So the Gemara says, Kibiyachal afilu balabayis, ein lo yachal lo hotzi kelev misham. They were saying, Kibiyachal, we don't think the Ribono Shel Olam, the Balabas, can't take out his utensils. Or in other words, we don't think the Balabas is strong enough to be able to conquer. The Balabas being God is strong enough to conquer again the nations of Canaan. Eretz Ocheles Yoshevahi. So they said, furthermore, it is a land that consumes its inhabitants. Darash Rava. So Rava dashed in the following. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam said, Ani chashavti letova v'heim chashvu l'ra. I did something for them that I thought was a good thing, but they took it as something negative. How so? Ani chashavti letova. I tried to do something good for them. T'chol heicha d'matu meis chashiva didahu ki heicha dinitredu v'lo lishlo abasrayhu. I made sure that wherever the Meraglim went, somebody died. Somebody died. What was the point of that? The point of that was that the people would be busy ultimately, again, with their avelos, with burying the dead, and they wouldn't notice that there were strangers among them. They wouldn't notice, again, that there were spies in the land. V'ike da'amri, others explain, Iov nach nafshe, v'atridu kuli ama behespeda. It was amazing. Others say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused Iov to die. Iov was alive at this time. Iov died. And because he was such a prominent individual, everybody was occupied with his funeral, and therefore no one paid attention to the Meraglim. Heim chashvu l'ra. But the Meraglim took this as a negative sign, and they said, Eretz ocheles yoshev. So we'll say, this is such an incredible yisod, by the way, and this is such a metaphor for life, that sometimes the Ribono Shel Olam does things that ultimately are a tova for us. They're good. He's trying to do something beneficial. But what? We just perceive it and understand it in the totally wrong way. So he was trying to do them a favor by causing these deaths in order that the attention should be taken from them. And meanwhile, what happened? They took this to mean that the land is diseased, that the land is compromised. Incredible. So, unehi be'einenu kechagovim, v'chein hayinu be'einenu. And then furthermore, the Meraglim said, we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. Excuse me, we were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes. In other words, what the Meraglim were saying is that they saw the Nephilim, they saw the great giants, and they said again two things. We felt like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and so we were in their eyes. So says the Gemara, Amra Mesharshia, Meraglim Shakri Havu. The Meraglim were liars. How so? Bishlama Unihi Be'inenu Kechagavim. I understand when it says that they were like grasshoppers in their own eyes, right? Why do I understand that? Because again, Lamaisa, they could comment on how they felt about themselves. Ella v'chein hayinu be'einehem minahava yadi. But how could they make a statement that we were like grasshoppers in their eyes, in the eyes of the inhabitants of the land? After all, again, they have no idea about how someone else feels or not. Therefore, they were liars. To which the Gemara says, no, velohi. It's not true, they weren't lying. How so? Ki havu mavri aveli. Tusi arzi havu mavri. We'll say, remember, going back to what we said before, that's what? Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Welcome back. So what happened? So the Gemara said before that what happens? That people were dying, right? Remember again, the Hashem Baruch Hu caused that people would die. When after the Levaya, we also have this concept, something called the Sudas Avra. Sudas Avra is a meal of consolation, right? Where the community is obligated to provide for the Avel food. So too again in Canaan, after they buried the dead, what happened? People would gather together for a Sudas Havra, for a meal of consolation, underneath the cedar trees. So what happened? V'chi chazinhu salki yasi bi'ilani. The Meraglim climbed up the trees in order to observe the inhabitants of the land. Shama de'kshami de'kamri. They heard the inhabitants of Canaan saying, Kachazinam inshi de'damu lekamsi bi'ilani. So he heard that the inhabitants of the land said, we see there are people that look like the size of grasshoppers hopping around the tree. So the Gemara is saying over here that the Meraglim weren't making this up, that the Meraglim actually heard the inhabitants of the land speaking about them and describing them again as grasshopper-like creatures. Vatisa kolaida vayitnu es kolam vayivku. So they went ahead, The people, after hearing the report of the Meraglim, the people raised their voice and they cried. Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, such a tragic Gemara. Amar Osa Hayom Erev Tisha B'Av Haya. Both said the Meraglim came back on the 8th of Av. And therefore that night when everyone cried was the 9th of Av. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein Bachu B'Chiyah Shalchinam, they cried for nothing. Va'ani Ekava Lahem B'Chiyah L'Doros. I will establish for them, Nebuch, a reason to cry for future generations. So I will say, they cried on the 9th of Av for absolutely no reason, not just for no reason, but they totally misunderstood the chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Shparuch said, unfortunately, now this day will be marked for real crying, for real tragedy. So the Pasuk says that the entire assembly wanted to stone them with stones. So this is a reference to Yehoshua, Kalev, Moshe, Aaron, Uksiv, and the Pasuk says, Ukivot Hashem Nira Bo'amoy. Juxtaposed to that Pasuk is the statement that the honor or the glory of God appeared in the O'amoy. Amre B'chivar Abba Malami, Shanot Lavonim V'zarkum Klape Malo. The Gemara says, what do you see from here? That it's not just Moshe and Aaron they wanted to stone, but rather what? They tried to stone HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. They threw stones heavenward as well. So the people ultimately who spoke negatively about the land died in a plague. The Meraglim died in a plague. They died a horrible death. What happened? Rav Shila ish kfar tamrasa milamid shenishtarve v'shonam v'nafa al tiburam. So we'll say, so this is a very dramatic event over here. Their tongues extended down to their navels. Again, the idea over here is they sinned with their tongue. So the tongue extended down to the navel. V'hayu toloim yotos milashonam. And literally worms or maggots came out of their tongue. V'nichnasos the tiburam, entered the navel. Umitiburam v'nichnasos bilshonam, and came back out of the navel and entered into their tongue. And therefore they died like that. Ranachim bar Yitzchak Amar ba'askara mesu. Ranachim bar Yitzchak said they died by the askara. Both say, so askara is a disease by which the throat constricts and a person essentially asphyxiates. The idea over here is some way, one or another, the death that they endured was related ultimately to their tongue or to their throat, to their speech. Both say, just so you understand, now the Gemara is going to jump back to the Yardim just a moment, but you see now that the tragedy of the story of the Meraglim was a tragedy of misunderstandings, right? Literally, it all came down to the fact that they didn't understand what the Ribbono Shel Olam was doing for them. And sometimes in life, when we don't understand things and we come to our own conclusions, that's when we get ourselves into terrible trouble. Meaning, had they just taken the time to ask Moshe Rabbeinu or to inquire of Aaron HaKohen, you know, this is what we saw in the land. Help us to understand what it is that we saw. Help us to interpret the meaning. What is the message? Why are people dying? Had they asked for interpretation of the message, the outcome could have been so dramatically different. And this is my Simcha Kol Yom. We see things in life, we think we know what it means, we interpret it a certain way, and often we're wrong. And again, this is true interpersonally. We see people do things, we hear people say things, we automatically interpret it in a particular way, often in a negative way, and we're wrong. People didn't necessarily have any kind of negative or malicious intent. This was the tragedy of the Meraglim, a tragedy of fundamental and profound misunderstandings. So the Gemara goes weiter. So we'll say back to the splitting of the Jordan River. So remember again, the Gemara said that everybody passed through the Jordan, and once the last member of Klal Yisrael passed through the Jordan, so the rivers returned back to their place. Shenemar, Vahi Ba'alos, Akonim Nosi Aron Bris Hashem, Mitoch HaYardin, Nosku Kapos Ragali Akonim El HaCharava, Vayashuvu Min HaYardin Limkomon, Vayelchu Kitmo Shloshom, Al Kol Gidosov. So we'll say, so the Pasuk says that when the Kohanim were holding the Aron Bris Hashem, the Ark of the Covenant of God, stepped back from the Yarden, and their feet went back onto dry ground, so the waters of the Yarden returned back to the way they flowed yesterday and the day before on all of its banks. Says something very interesting. Nimtza Aron Venosav V'Kohanim Mitzad Echad V'Yisrael Mitzad Echad. So we'll say, listen to this. Here's what's interesting. So the way the splitting of the Yarden worked was the following. The Kohanim holding the Aron stepped into the water. What happened when they stepped into the water? Water split. Everybody, now the Kohanim and the Aaron remain where they are. Everybody goes through. And the Pasuk says, the Kohanim took a step back onto dry land. When they did that, what happens? The waters came back. But here's the problem. What's the problem? Klal Yisrael is on the Eretz Yisrael side, and the Kohanim and the Aaron on the other side. So what happened? So the Gemara says, Nosa Aaron es nos av va'avar. It's an amazing sight. The Aaron lifted the Kohanim who were carrying it, right? The Aaron carried those who were carrying it and took them to the other side of the yardage. Shine Emar, Vahi Kasher Tam Kala'am La'avar, Vayavar Aaron Hashem, Vakohanim Lefne'am. Because the Pasuk says, after the entire nation finished crossing over the Yarden, so the Ark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Kohanim before the people. Was an incredible, incredible miracle. Imagine that incredible miracle. Remember again, it would have been just as easy for the Kohanim to go ahead and just walk across holding up. The Moshe was trying to make this was a major last miracle to be able to end off that chapter of living in the desert. To see the concept, the Moshe says, very important yisod of Aron Nosei Es Nosav. That we think we carry the Torah, but in reality, the Torah carries us. So the Gemara says, and this was the reason for Uzzah. And remember, what happened with Uzzah? Uzzah lived during the time of David HaMelech. The Aron was returned from the Plishtim and being transported back to Yerushalayim. What happened? David HaMelech put it on a wagon. As the wagon is carrying the Aron seems to tilt. It looks like it's falling off. Uzzah reaches out to steady the Aron. He touches the Aron, major sin, and what happens? He dies right there. So the Gemara says, Uzzah should have remembered this right from the Yarden. Shenamar vayavoad Goron Kidon vayishlach Uzzah es yado lechoz es Aron. They came to the threshing floor of Kidon. Uzzah stuck out his hand because he thought the Aron was slipping off the wagon. Amar laKadosh Baruch Hu, Uzzah, no sav nasa. Atzmala kol shekein. So God said, Uzzah, the Aron is capable of carrying those who carried it. It could certainly take care of itself as well. Meaning, as much as Uzzah's intent was a good one, namely, to go in and steady the Aron could take care of itself. The Aron does not need man to steady it. So what happens? Vayichar af Hashem b'Uzzah, vayakeyu sham al hashal. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and literally struck down Uzzah, and smote him there al hashal. What does that mean? Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Lazar chad amar al iske shalo. So some say again he was struck down iske shalo. Rashi says over here shagaga sheshagag lechosbo. He was struck down because again he made a mistake and touched the aron. Vechad amar sheosat tzrachav befanav. Others say shalo al hashal. Excuse me, means that Uzzah relieved himself in the presence of the Aron. So because he did that, ultimately, again, he was killed. Bayamas Sham Im Aron Elokim. He was killed there again together with the Aron of Hashem. Rabbi Yochanan, Uzzah Bali Olam Haba. Uzzah immediately went to Olam Haba. Shene Emar Im Aron Elokim. Together with the Aron of Hashem. Ma Aron, the Olam Kayim. Just like the Aron is always in existence. Let's remember again, the Aron is one of the Kelim that ultimately, again, was hidden away in the days of Yoshio, before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Af Uzzah Bali Olam Haba. So to Uzzah automatically into Olam Haba as well. Meaning as much as he made a mistake, because the mistake ultimately was of beautiful and holy motivations, he went to Olam Haba immediately. Vayichar leDavid al Asher paras Hashem peretz Uzzah. So David got upset. David got upset because ultimately, aparas Hashem paras Uzzah, God caused the breach with Uzzah. That David HaMelech's face blackened with anguish. He was upset. He was not angry, but sad. So he says, "Ele me'ata." One second, so says the Gemara. But one second again. Normally, when it says "vayichar," "vayichar" doesn't mean anguish. "Vayichar" normally means anger. So is David HaMelech angry or is he saddened? To which the Gemara says, "Hachanami, hasim ksiv af, hachalo ksiv ach." So the Gemara says, when you see the phrase "charon af," so "charon af" means anger. "Charon" by itself without "af" means anguish. So the Gemara says, "Darsh Rava, mipnei man ne'enash David." Why was David punished? Now understand that the death of Uzzah the death of Uzzah is considered to be a punishment for David HaMelech. Because here David orchestrated this whole return of the Aron to Yerushalayim, and what happens? And Uzzah died in the midst of it. So the fact that Uzzah died in the midst of it was a punishment for David. So why was David HaMelech? Why was he punished? Well, this is amazing. Shekara l'divrei Torah zemiros. David HaMelech made the mistake of calling the words of Torah zemiros. He called the words of Torah a song. Shene'emar, Zemiros Hayu Lichukecha, the base Migurai. Because David HaMelech said, literally, your statutes were like Zemiros for me in the house of my dwelling. We'll say, now this is an amazing, amazing idea. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Zemiros, Rashi's in the right, this is in the left hand column now. Zemiros Hayu Lichukecha, the base Migurai. Kishayisi Boreach Mipnei Oivai, the Agar Mipneihem. So when I was running from my enemies, so your Torah was like a source of comfort for me. It was like songs for me. So interestingly enough, Amar LeHakadosh Baruch Hu, God says to David, Divrei Torah Shekasa Bohen, Hisif Einecha. Or I should say, Hatoif Einecha Bo Ve'einenu. The Torah about which it said Abosai in Mishlei, Hatoif Einecha Bo, if you blink your eyes, it will no longer be there. Now, listen, now what does that mean? If you blink your eyes, it will no longer be there. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Lashon Kava Vekafalta Mitargaminon Viteof Shintachbil Einecha Listom Ayin Behesech Adas Mistakil Bohen. Listen to this. This is an incredible Musar in general. When it comes to Torah, Abosai, if you blink your eyes for a second, it's no longer there with you. In other words, that if you want your Torah, it has to be something that you maintain a constant vigilance and adherence to. This is why the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Ezev chayom ezen liyomayim." If you leave me for one day, I'll leave you for two. Well, so we know this. What happens when a person misses a day of shir? So what happens? Well, say it's not the pshat that a person just missed a day. You miss one day, you miss a lifetime. Right? You miss one day, you could listen to this, you could listen to that, you'll never recapture that. There are certain sunk costs in life that if you miss it, you're out. You're not, and I will say again, it's not just missing one, it's missing one whole chelik of an entire lifetime. That happens with Torah. You blink your eyes for a second, and it's gone, it's there. It's only if you constantly plug away, it's only if you constantly maintain your connection that it remains with you. So David HaMelech calls this again Zemiros, he calls this songs. This is not songs, because we'll say the idea, by the way, by the idea with Zemiros, I'll just tell you this quickly. The Marsha says over here, he says by songs, Ki Azemer, I'm just reading this to you, Ki Azemer hu befiv shel adam, lefi sha'a, aval divrei torim tzrichim tmidus. But so you know what songs, what happens with a song? You hum it here, you hum it there. Today I like this song. Tomorrow I like that song. The song I liked 5 years ago is out of style. Now that's what happens with songs. Torah requires tmidus. Torah requires continuity, consistency. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam was very upset with David when he calls the Torah simply Zemiros. You think Torah is like Zemiros? You'll see you're going to trip up, you're going to make a mistake with something so posh that even children know it. So I will say what happens. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and gave to Kahas the important task of carrying the Aron. The idea we'll say is what? That for all the other people who transported the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu gave them wagons. They had wagons to transport the menorah, wagons to transport the mizbeach. But yet, there was one thing that did not have a wagon, and that was the aron. The aron had to be carried by hand. And yet, v'ihu asei ba'agalta. But yet, David HaMelech went ahead and transported, decided to put the aron on the wagon. See, so this is the idea. Kosh Baruch Hu said, you think this is Zemiros? Zemiros is such a light term. Such an empty word to define, to capture the profundity of Torah. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because you treat Torah lightly, you will see ultimately that you'll make a mistake with something so simple and so elementary. The mistake that David HaMelech made is that he put the Aron on a wagon, when in fact, again, it should not be Aron. But once again, that Marasha, just remember that Marasha, songs are nice and songs are pretty and songs are beautiful, but they're on the lips, they leave the lips. Torah, in order for it to be meaningful, requires a consistency and the continuity. He goes on, he says, Vayach ba'an shebe shemesh, ki ra'o ba'aron, mishum de ra'o vayach. Elohim's supposed to listen to this. So now the Aron came to Beit Shemesh. We'll say this is after the episode, the Plishtim had captured the Aron. So what happens? After the Plishtim captured the Aron, so the Aron miraculously again, the Plishtim decided they didn't want the Aron anymore. Why? Because they were suffering terribly with the Aron in their midst. They put it on a wagon and they just sent it back to Klal Yisrael. So miraculously, the wagon came to Beit Shemesh. So what happens? So when the wagon came to Beit Shemesh, the people of Beit Shemesh saw it, and they were stricken. They were stricken down by plague and by disease. When they saw the Gemara says, because they saw the Aron, they were stricken. Rabbi Avo, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Lazar, Chad Amar Kotu Mishtachim Hayu, V'Chad Amar Mili Nami Amar. So we'll say, so the Gemara says the following. One opinion says that the reason they were stricken was because when they saw the Aron coming, they continued reaping their wheat, right? They continued harvesting the wheat. When they saw the Aron, they should have stopped everything that they were doing. But instead, they just continued working and said, oh, look, everybody, the Aron's here. And others said that they said disparaging words. Man amrach, lahad di imrius, uman asa alach di faisis. So what were the negative words that they said? They said, Aron, who got you so angry, ultimately, again, that you left? And who appeased you that now you decided to come back? In other words, not a good idea, right? That the people went ahead and they said to the Aron, you know, how did you let yourself be taken captive? And oh, it's very nice of you now to come back. So they spoke disparagingly to the Aron, and therefore, ultimately, again, they were punished. Vayach ba'am shivim ish. So literally, again, we'll say, now this is an amazing number. There were 70,050 people. I'm sorry, it's just the opposite. 50,070 people, right, struck down by plague. So we'll say, the number is just a strange number. So which leads the Gemara to interpret, it's not literal, rather, Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Elazar, Chad Amar Shivim Ish Hayu. Some say that in reality there were only 70 people who were killed. V'chol echad ve'echad shakol k'chamishim alef. But each of these people were so holy that they were each considered like what? Like 50,000. So really only 70 that were killed, but each was the equivalent of 50,000 people. V'chad Amar, and one said, chamishim alef hayu. There were 50,000 people who were killed. V'chol echad ve'echad shakol k'shivim Sanhedrin. And each of them were as holy as an entire Sanhedrin made up of 70 people. Vayhi ki tsa'adu nosei Aron Hashem shisha tsa'adim, vayizbach shor umari. So we'll say again, now going back now to taking the Aron back to Yerushalayim under David HaMelech's rule. So what happened? So when the people who were carrying the Aron would take 6 steps, so they would offer up a shor is an ox, Meri Rabosa means any animal that's fattened up for sacrificial service. Uksiv, so that's on one hand, it says that every 6 steps they offered up a shor and the meri. On the next it says, Uksiv, Shiva Parim B'Shiva Elim. But yet the next pasuk says they offered up 7 cows and 7 rams. So which one was it? Amra Papa Bar Shmuel, Akol Psio Psia Shor Umeri. So Rapa Bar Shmuel says, for every step they took, they offered up an ox and a fattened animal. I'll call sheish v'sheish psios shiva parim v'shivim. So we'll say every step was 1 shor and 1 fattened animal, and for every unit of 6 steps, they offered up 7 cows and 7 rams. A lot of karbanos. Amr le'Rav Chista, im kein mileisas kol eretz Yisrael b'amos. Bless you. So Rav Chista said, if that's the case, then literally you filled up all of eretz Yisrael. You filled up all of eretz Yisrael with what? With b'amos. With altars, as well say, that means literally they're offering karbanos every single step. That's a lot of karbanos and a lot of bamos, a lot of private altars being erected. El Amr Rav Chista, what it means is like this: Al kol sheish v'sheish psios shor umeri. For every 6 steps they took, they were offering up 1 shor, 1 ox, and 1 fattened animal. Al kol shisha sedarim shal sheish psios. On every 6 units of 6 steps, 36 steps, Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. All right, so that's a little bit more manageable. Then 7 cows, right, and 7 rams. Uksiv, suppose the pasuk goes on and says, Kidon, Uksiv Nachon. Suppose interestingly enough, when describing the threshing floor,
when describing the flesh, the threshing floor, where Uzzah died, where Uzzah touched the Aron, so at first it calls it the threshing floor of Kidon, and then it calls it the threshing floor of Nachon. So which one is it? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Betchila Kidon, Ulebasov Nachon. In the beginning, Rabbi said, now Kidon means a spear. In the beginning, it was called the threshing floor of the spear, because it is there ultimately again that Uzzah was punished. Ulebasov Nachon. Look at Rashi. Rashi Ulebasov. After the Aron remained there for a little while in the house of a place and a person by the name of Obed Edom, ultimately Obed Edom's house was blessed as a result of the presence of the Aron, and therefore everything was settled back to normal. Those were like, when Uzzah died as a result of touching the Aron, people became afraid of the Aron and felt that the Aron was no longer a source for any type of positive blessing, but rather was only a source for punishment and divine retribution. However, again, after the Aron spent 6 months in the house of Obed Edom, because they were nervous to take it anywhere else, the house of Obed Edom was blessed as a result of the presence of the Aron, and people once again saw that what? That the Aron was an incredible source of blessing. You look at your own, Rashi brings down a very beautiful idea. Rashi brings down that when the Aron was in the house of Obed Edom, that again his whole household was blessed. His wife gave, the Navi actually says, the Gemara says, his wife gave birth to 6 children at a time. This is before tuitions, right? His daughters-in-law gave birth to 6 children. This is an incredible, incredible bracha. So the idea over here is, it calls it first that the Aron was identified as, it stayed in the threshing floor of Kidon, the spear, because it struck down Uzzah, but then people saw the restorative, beautiful, and brachadic powers of the Aron afterwards. Nimtzeis Atomer, so we'll say back to the Yardin. Nimtzas Ata Omer, Shlosha Mini Avanim Hayu. Bosei, it turns out that by the Yardin, there are 3 different sets of stones. We spoke about this yesterday a little bit already. Echot Shehekim Moshe Be'eretz Moav. Bosei, the first set of stones were the stones that Moshe Rabbeinu himself set up in Moav. Right? Shene Emar, Be'eva HaYardin Be'eretz Moav. Remember again, these are the set of stones that Moshe Rabbeinu ordered during his lifetime to be set up in the lands of Moab, and these stones were written in the Torah in 70 different languages. And later on the pasuk says, you shall write upon them all of the words of this Torah. The Asya Be'er Be'er. Or Be'er Be'er. And we make a Gzirushava of Be'er, Be'er, that ultimately, again, the Torah was written on these stones in 70 different languages. Take a look at Rashi Rabosai. Shehemid. First of all, look at Nimseis. Nimseis. Sefer Debrayse de la'elhu, elamishum de tanaba, va'al davar zen nanash uza afsi b'chol hanis. Rabosai, remember again. So we took a little break with the Uzzah story. Now we're back to the Yardin story. Lex Rashi, Shehemid Moshe v'Evra ha'yardin ba'arvasmo, v'tan debrayse ki kai be'eretz kinan kari, kari Evra ha'mizrach, Evra ha'yardin, v'chi kai ba'arvasmo, So first set of stones are the stones that Moshe Rabbeinu commissioned to be set up in the lands of Moab. And on these stones, the Torah was to be written in 70 different languages. That's the first set of stones set up by Moshe Rabbeinu in Eretz Moab. Torah is written 70 languages. Second set of stones were ultimately commissioned by Yahushua. And where were they placed? In the banks of the Jordan River itself. Shenehemar, Ushteim Esrei Avonim, Hekim Yahushua B'Sochardin. What was the point of those stones? Those stones were to serve as a memorial. Those stones were to serve as a monument for what? For the fact that Klal Yisrael crossed the Jordan. Nothing written on those stones. Next. The Echad Shekin B'Gilgal. But I'll say the third set of stones were the stones ultimately again that were to remain in Gilgal. Remember again, we learned about those third set of stones. What happened? Those stones were taken from the Jordan River, from the place where the Kohanim were standing. Remember, first they were used ultimately again to erect the Mizbeach by Har Grizim and Har Eval. And then the Mizbeach was deconstructed and they were set up to be an eternal monument in Gilgal. Shene Emar, Ves Shteim Esrei Ha'avanim Ha'ilah Sher Lachu. So, Tanur Rabbanan, so also remember again, Now, on those stones in Gilgal, based on what we saw yesterday, what happened? The Torah was also written on those stones in 70 different languages. So, Tan Rabbanon, Ketzad Kasvu Yisrael Es HaTorah. So, says the Gemara, how did Klal Yisrael write the Torah on the stones? Now, look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ketzad Kasvu Ala Mizbeach Bahar Eval. But say, on the stones that were part of the Mizbeach, that when taken apart, were then taken to Gilgal, how did Klal Yisrael write the Torah on these stones? Rabbi Huda says, Agabe Avanim Kasvu. Rabbi Huda says they actually chiseled the words of the Torah onto the stone itself. Shenemar, V'kasafta al ha'avanim es kol divrei ha'Torah azos. You shall write on the stones all the words of this Torah. V'acharkach, Sadu Osan Besid. And after they wrote the Torah on the stones, interestingly enough, they covered the writing with a layer of plaster. Okay, they covered it with a layer of plaster. Amr Rabbi Shimon, Lidvarecha, Hech Lamdu Umo Sha'osa Azman Torah. Listen, now remember, what was the point of writing it on those stones? The point is that the nations should be able to see the Torah. But if you just wrote it on the stone and covered it with plaster, so how are they going to see the words of the Torah? Amar lo, bina yisir nasin bar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono shel Olam gave the nations additional wisdom. Vishigru notiron shalahem. And their scribes came along, they sent their scribes. They kilfu es hasid, and they peeled away the plaster. Vehisi'uha. And ultimately, again, they were able to see the Torah. Bless you. So I'll say it's an amazing idea. So they went ahead. So Rashi says over here, v'esiua v'hetikua kilomar natlua misham ayedei ha'ataka. They peeled back the plaster, and what happened? And they were able to see the Torah, and they copied it down. Va'al davazeh nis. Va'al. I'll say just. I'll take something amazing. So the Maharal comments, and the Maharal says, I don't say what. Well, why? Meaning, why don't you just leave it alone and let them go ahead and just read it? Why do you have to cover it with plaster? So it's nice. They understood, peel back the plaster, copy down the Torah. Why not just put the plaster there to begin with? But say, the Maharal says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach the Ummah Yisrael, by definition, Klal Yisrael, a very important lesson, which is, Torah requires effort. If you think you're just going to show up, and the Torah is going to be there, and the Rak is going to be there, and you're just going to ingest it, it doesn't work that way. Torah requires some element of effort. Torah requires some element of self-sacrifice. When you walk, you see, I'm saying, it's an incredible metaphor. You look at the Torah, often it just looks like a blank stone. How will I ever go ahead and master this and understand it? But when you begin to peel back the plaster, the words are revealed and the understanding is there. You have to put in a little bit of amelos, or a lot of amelos, a lot of effort, and the Torah is there for your taking. And it's because of this availability that they had for Torah, and yet they did not avail themselves of this opportunity, that their decree was sealed for Gehenom. Shehaya lehem lilmod v'lo lamdu. They had the ability to learn, and what? They did not. So I'll say this is an incredible idea that ultimately, again, the Gemara says the Ribbono Shel Olam placed Torah, made Torah accessible for the nations, and the fact that they did not avail themselves of this opportunity to learn of the wisdom of God ultimately sealed their fate for Gehenim. Reb Shimon says, Agabe Sidkasvua. No, what happens is they first put a layer of plaster on the rock, and they went ahead and. And then they, because Agabe Sid Kasvua, the Kasvu Lahen Lamata. So I'll say, so what happens? So they plastered the rock first, and then they went ahead and what? And they wrote on top of the plaster. What does it mean? The Kasvu Lahen Milamata. Look at Rashi. Bisof Hadaf, Leman Asher Lo Yelamdu Ole, Elmine Ksiv, Kiacharem Tacharimim. Vidavazak Kasvu Lamata, Lohodia Lishiva Umos, Hiyashim Chutz Migvuli Yisrael, Shonestavu Lachrimam. So I'll say, listen to this. I'm sorry, actually, let me say it differently. Reb Shimon Omer, Agabe Sid Kasvu. So Reb Shimon disagrees with Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda says they chiseled the Torah on the rock, then covered the rock with plaster. Reb Shimon says they put the plaster there first and then wrote on the plaster. Then, the Kasvu Lahen Lamata, they wrote at the end, the bottom of this rock, Leman Asher Lo Yilamdu Eschem Lasos Kichol. They wrote on this rock that in order that Klal Yisrael should not learn from all of the abominable ways of all of the nations of Canaan, Halamarata, Shim Hayu Chosun B'Tshuva, Hayu Mekablin Osam. Bosei, so why did they put this pasuk at the end there? Klal Yisrael should not learn from the abominable ways of the nations, to teach the nations that if they do tshuva, Klal Yisrael will accept them. But if they don't do tshuva, then what? Then Klal Yisrael have an obligation to either drive them out of the land or ultimately to destroy them. Amar Rav Bar Shila, my time is Rabbi Shimon. What's Rabbi Shimon's logic? Where he says that they wrote it on top of the plaster. Dechsev v'hayu ha'amim misrafos sid. Because the pasuk literally says that the nations misrafos sid literally means that they will be burned because of the plaster. Al iske sid. It means that they're burned because of the inyan, because of the issues concerning the plaster. So what does that mean? That because they had the ability to learn the Torah from what? From the plaster, right? From literally that which was written on the plaster, and they did not do so. Therefore, they will be destroyed. Rabbi Yehuda kisid. Rabbi Yehuda says they're like plaster. Masid einotakana elasreifa. Just like plaster, there is no way to fix it except by melting it down and reforging it. Af osam hakusim inlem takana. Ella Sreifa. Also, too, again, those kusim, I will say kusim generally means, you know, again, usually refer to people who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. In this context, it's a reference ultimately again to the seven nations. They also have no remedy but to go ahead and burn them. So, both say again, the idea of destruction. I just want to point out, Rashi says something very important over here, that Rashi of Kasumi Lamata, this idea if you, that ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to destroy or to drive out the indigenous nations to Canaan in order that we not learn from their ways. But you see over here that the Gemara opens up the possibility that if they don't have to convert, because we don't believe in forced conversions, but if they're able to go ahead and simply leave those idolatrous ways and accept some basic framework of spirituality, like being a ger toshav, they don't have to be a ger tzedek, but being a ger toshav, that ultimately they are permitted to live side by side with Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. That's part of the reason why the rocks were erected. The rocks were put there, the Torah was put there, to show the Umos that if you accept this basic framework, you don't have to become Jewish, but if you adopt our system of morality, our system of justice, then ultimately, again, you could have a place by us, you could have a place in this land, and you need not be destroyed. Rabbi Yossi, we'll stop over here for today. Mirat Hashem, again, another beautiful daf of Agadata. We'll pick up three lines up from the bottom on Lamed Hey, on the base tomorrow. Yeah.